Now we're going to turn to the migration debate tonight. Orla, before we talk about the debate today, can you bring us up to speed on Rishi Sunak and Mount Street? Not necessarily connected, but those two separate issues that are very prominent at the moment.
Yeah, so obviously there's been a row brewing for the last week or so after Justice Minister Helen McEntee said about 80% of asylum seekers coming into Ireland were coming in via the Northern Ireland border. Rishi Sunak, Jacob Rees-Mogg, other people in the last few days have said that that's proof that the Rwanda bill is working in the UK. And Rishi Sunak today was speaking out saying that he wanted urgent clarification that no Garda checkpoints would be along the Northern Ireland border after the Justice Minister was saying about 100 Gardaí had been freed up to work on immigration issues. She has since come out and clarified, no, that does not mean they'll all be along the border. They're just working on immigration issues more generally. But this has kind of led to a diplomatic spat, and there was meant to be a meeting between James Cleverly and Helen McEntee on Monday that was cancelled apparently due to a diary issue. But it looks like it's kind of running now, and Rishi Sunak is kind of making a point of saying, like, oh, I thought you didn't want a border. Why all this talk now about a border or putting guards on the border? But Simon Harris and Helen McEntee coming out saying, no, there won't be guards along the border. But the Tories are loving this kind of, I suppose, for them, proof that the Rwanda plan is working, and it's a diversion for them from other issues in the UK.
Meanwhile, back on Mount Street, what was how is an accommodation reached on that today, or at least some action taken to alleviate the situation?
So obviously that's been building up for the last good few months, I suppose. About 285 men were moved from there today. 186 went to City West and 99 went to Crooksling. I was speaking to one of the men who was moved this morning. He said it was about 6 a.m. when officials started to arrive at the site. They were waking men up and asking them to pack up their things and saying they'd either get a bus or a taxi. There was a mix of bus and taxis. The guy I spoke to, he got a taxi out to City West, but he said there was a couple of hours where they weren't told where they were being going. They were just said, pack up your things and you'll get a bus or taxi somewhere. But it was primarily to City West and Crooksling that the men were sent today.
Okay. The Rural Independence motion today on the EU Asylum and Migration Pact, what was the core of that and how did it go?
Yeah, so basically the Rural Independence, they don't agree with the EU Migration Pact that MEPs voted in favour of a few weeks back. And the bill they put forward today is they're saying that they want the government to consider a referendum on the Migration Pact, to put it to the Irish people. And they accuse the government of, quote, imposing large-scale immigration on a local population without consultation. They said Ireland's already a tipping point in terms of the housing crisis, health issues and other things. And they said there was, quote, absolutely no rational or logical reason why Ireland should opt into the EU Migration and Asylum Pact. Obviously, Helen McEntee and others in the Dáil debate, defended that and said the pact is necessary and it will help Ireland. But the Rural Independents want a debate and even possibly a referendum on whether or not we should implement that here.
Okay. Richard O'Donoghue, you spoke on the motion earlier on this evening. You spoke of communities being afraid. Are you against Ireland opting into the EU Asylum and Migration Pact?
There's part of the what they're opting into. There's parts for the good. But the opt-out clause should be kept in place so we can opt out. That's what we're saying. At the moment, with the amount of people that we have in this country and the amount of services that we have in this country, we can't hardly cope with the people that we need to house ourselves. We're not saying that we want to be able to look after people in this country. Anyone that comes in here, we want to make sure they're not handed a tent and said live on the side of a street. We want to accommodate people, as many people as we can, but accommodate them with dignity. That's what we're about. So yes, we don't want to have a massive influx of people coming into this country because we cannot care for them at this present time. I don't want to stop them. There's people that are coming into this country all the time for their futures, and there's people that are coming in here working, and we need people to work in this country, 100%. And there's people across the board in hospitals, in hospitality, and all different sectors that are working. But we have a massive amount of people coming into this country, which are mainly males, and they're being put into place.
But isn't that what happens if people are coming here to work? If there was a boom in the building sector during the Celtic Tiger boom, there was a large amount of the people who were coming to the country were males.
There were a massive amount of were males, but they were being accommodated and they were building an infrastructure that's in place. We have an awful lot of sites that are actually being stopped at the moment during planning regulations. They're held up.
Sure. Is the issue accommodation or gender?
I don't have an issue with any gender coming into this country. I have an issue with accommodating people with dignity. If there's place in the workplace for people, yes, 100% welcome them in. But you have to have accommodation where you can actually house people to make sure that they can move forward. At the moment, we have over 14,000 people that don't have a bed tonight in this country. So how are we going to accommodate people coming into this country? And we want them to set up their lives here. We want them to work here and to move forward. I work with different nationalities every day. I'm a business person. I've always been a business person and I welcome it. But the one thing I wouldn't like to see tomorrow morning, if one of my children, one of my family or anyone that I know was going into a country and handed a tent. All That's right. the one thing we want to make sure the services there for people.
And the figure you cite there, 14,000 people without a bed, that's coming from
across the country. There were stats that we got.
Do you mean homeless or I mean homeless, there's a distinction, but yeah. between not having a bed and
not having a homeless and not having a bed. That's what we're saying in this country at the moment. There's 14
a combination of homeless people. But you appreciate. I know it mightn't be the bed they want, but not everybody.
Yes, not everybody
who's homeless is. But not everybody who's homeless is, yeah. is without
but
a
also
bed.
People
they may be in emergency accommodation. Yeah. They may be in a hotel accommodation.
But also, if you look around this country at the moment, how many people at the moment have all their children living at home at the moment that are married and have their children and had to move back home because they can't get housing? That's another, but when you look at it, okay. there's a lot of people as well on population that are not actually being put down on the list, but are actually on a housing list, but can't actually afford to build a house, or the councils can't afford to put people on a housing list because that the housing stock
is right. I want to go to Timmy Dooley on that. What Richard O'Donoghue, who is there, is saying, Timmy Dooley, this is largely an issue of resources as far as he's concerned and the ability of the country to accommodate people. Now, when you see people on Mount Street in tents being moved to a better class of tent, admittedly, but still a tent in Crooks Ling. Is it hard to articulate an argument against that viewpoint?
Well, you've got to go back and look at these people and where they have come from and why they're here. They're asylum seekers. Obviously, they have to be processed, but many of them will have come from war-torn regions, will have come here under threat of death or persecution or have basic fundamental rights not available to them. So they take a shot at it. Now, some of them for sure are economic migrants and don't fit within the asylum criteria, and when they're processed probably won't be afforded residency on that basis. Of course it's a challenge to provide services, it will always be, but you don't get to make that call. They make the call, they arrive, and then the state has a responsibility under various international conventions to treat them with as much dignity as we can. And yes, that has created the situation on Mount Street, which was an appalling situation that has, in my view, remained too long. And where they're gone to tonight, if they're in City West, they will have a bed. If they're out in Crosslinks, they'll be in military tents. It's not great. It's the best we can offer right now. I'd like to think we were in a stronger position and we were better able to provide them with accommodation.
Sure. Well, can you see that offering improve? Given the challenges there are for building accommodation, can you see the offering improve in the near term?
I think in the medium term it will. I think as the state is requisitioning more buildings, converting more facilities, old office buildings, etc. I think that will help. I also think, there's criminality behind the passage of people from countries to here as well. So there's an element of people smuggling going on. And I think where it gets out that maybe conditions are not as good as they might expect, that may divert people to other locations as well. That remains to be seen. But I think there is going to be significant pressure right across Europe. And that's why I think, and where I would disagree significantly with Richard, whatever chance we have of addressing this at European level, we're not going to be able to address it on our own. And I think, if anything, people should recognise from the way in which Britain has played a little bit of silly buggers over the last number of days, that it's clear that if we're outside the pact, we have no chance of resolving and doing this at union level.
Okay, all right. Thomas Pringle, in the course of the debate today, I mean, you've heard Richard O'Donoghue articulate one argument, although you're from Independent Ireland, although you spoke with the Rural Independent Group, but you're not a Rural Independent.
The Rural Independent grouping stays until actually the next election, so I am within the Rural Independent Group. I am the General Secretary of Independent Ireland, which doesn't come into play until you get actually elected under a party.
All right, thanks for the clarification on that. You're an independent of a different stripe, Thomas Pringle. What did you make of the arguments articulated in the debate today against signing up to the Asylum and Migration Pact?
Well, I think I didn't hear Richard's contribution today in the debate, but I think the tone of the Rural Independent Group was definitely a lot different than what Richard has been saying here tonight, and the tone of the motion and the debate that took place there, and it was talking about fighting age men and all this kind of stuff here, and asylum seekers coming in and taking over the country and all this carry on in this language. And it certainly wasn't about concerns about that they had anywhere to deliver anything to get there. And that's the problem with it, and that's the problem that the tone of the debate has taken. Because in reality, behind it all, these are people. They're people that are in need of help. They're people that are only here because their own countries are in such a situation that they can't stay there, and they have to come here, and they're asking us for our help and support. And we're sadly treating those people in that way, and we've seen it manifesting itself across the country.
Well, that's to be determined, isn't it, by the process. I mean, some people are obviously coming because they're fleeing persecution or threat or anything else, and others aren't, but the asylum process determines
determine that, and we should have the respect and the decency to actually let people live, and let people live in a reasonably comfortable and as best of fashion as we can afford, and we can give them while that process is being dealt with and they're going through that process. Unfortunately, that's not what's happening, and unfortunately, we're seeing this kind of debate taking place all the time, and that's wrong, I believe, and it's something that we should be above that, and we should be more understanding of people's circumstances, and we are well able and can well afford to actually have a decent system and have a system that looks after people. And the idea that our own people are homeless because of this is not true, and it's not right. And there was a homelessness long before there was asylum seekers in this country, and there will be, unfortunately, that's because of the actions of the government, and that's the actions of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael over the years, and that's why we have homeless people, and that's why we have a lack of housing. It's not because of asylum seekers, and that's very important.
Orla, can you? On it,
okay, I'll come back to you in a second, Richard. Some of the other people who spoke at the debate earlier, Orla, and also then the response of the government ministers. You could take us through them before we get into some of the other discussions here in studio.
Yeah, just to pick up on that point there, Breed Smith made a similar point of, if you deported every asylum seeker in the morning, we would still have a massive housing crisis. We would have healthcare issues, we would have childcare issues. So to put the blame on asylum seekers, as some people have done, is completely unfair.
Put it on asylum seekers.
I'm not saying you specifically at all, but she did say some people in the Dáil have done that, and they've spoken about plantations and things like that, and Irish people being replaced, which is very dangerous right-wing rhetoric. And she said, you know, that there's a lot of scaremongering going on, particularly related to men of colour, who she said some people are saying are a danger to women and children. And she said, you know, we need to be very careful with the type of language we use. Helen McEntee as well said that, you know, some of the commentary in the Dáil of late is feeding blatant racism and also, you know, anger towards Gardaí. We saw the violent scenes last week in Newtown Mount Kennedy, and she said some TDs and politicians have inflamed that, I suppose, by some of the rhetoric they're saying. She obviously defended the EU migration pact, saying there's nothing in the pact that doesn't benefit Ireland, and I'm absolutely steadfast in that view. I suppose just the five main proposals of that pact are to create uniform rules around identification of people, to develop a common database about new arrivals, to speed up decisions, and to develop a solidarity mechanism, and to ensure the EU is prepared for so-called future crises. So she was basically saying, you know, this will help Ireland deal with migration in the years ahead. And she was making the point of, you know, if we do go it alone, as we've seen in the UK post-Brexit, that, you know, they have actually seen an increase in migration. So if we stand alone, you know, we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot, was kind of, I suppose, what she was saying, essentially, that we are stronger as part of the EU rather than saying, like the UK have, we're going to deal with it ourselves.
Okay. Richard Dudley, we began, I suppose, this evening with you articulating that you felt Ireland is under significant pressure as a result of the numbers of people who are coming here at the moment. But given that the Asylum and Migration Pact contains a solidarity mechanism where people can effectively put their hands up and say they're in need of aid or help, or to avail of other member states to show them solidarity, is that an aspect of the pact you would encourage the state to sign up to?
The pact, I think, allows for 28,600 odd, I think, people coming into the country per year. This is what the pact is, that they have to take in up to 28,600 people. I said today it was around 30,000 people per year coming into the country. At the moment, we're not able to process what's coming in at the moment, and it's a low influx compared to 30,000 people. How can we expect to process people coming in here and give them accommodation if the system within the departments are so slow that it's actually going backwards?
Last week,
that's a valid point, but if we opt out of the pact, people will still come.
So, you see, there is this simplistic argument being put forward by some under the banner, let's opt out. And that's meant to give the impression to people, if we opt out, we won't have any migrants coming, we won't have any asylum seekers coming. They're still going to come. They're getting here as we know. And that's not going to stop if we opt out of the migration. It's how do we collectively, as a European bloc, manage this in an effective way.
Well, what particular part of the EU asylum and migration pact do you see as alleviating the situation as it is at the moment? What part, if by say 2026 it was in place, what would we not be dealing with then that we are dealing with now?
I think the secondary migration piece, where people land in the first country. I mean, there was the Dublin Convention, which was supposed to require individuals who sought asylum in the country that they first arrived at in Europe.
It was the country they first applied in.
And I should say we had a discussion on this last night, and there was a back and forth, and I probably added to the confusion there. Yeah,
no,
the
less,
first,
less,
yeah, the say. First member state yeah. in which somebody applies is deemed to be the country that they should.
But if we don't have a database that's properly maintained and is shared by member countries, we've no way of managing that. So it's a coordinated approach. It's not going to prevent migration. Let's be honest. It's not going to prevent people seeking asylum, because all the threats, all the issues, the wars, the climate change issues are only going to get worse. So if we're struggling, which we are at the moment, to deal with what we're getting, recognising that the Union is going to have greater pressures, then we better work together to try to find a more common approach. It's not the solution, but it's a methodology.
The common approach is to create a fortress Europe and see more people dying in the Mediterranean, drowning, that are trying to access Europe, or setting up camps in Libya and Europe funding them to where people can be raped and those camps, and that's the kind of fortress.
But that's the situation that's there at the moment, but that's
going to be perpetrated and continued on and strengthened under the pact, and that's the problem that I would have with it, and I wouldn't be in favour.
So, what's the solution if things are bad now, and things in your estimation will continue to be bad under the EU Asylum and Migration Pact? Are you know where should people's applications be processed? Should everybody who wants to arrive be let come to Europe and then have their application processed in Europe? Would that be your view?
I think that would be the reasonable and sensible thing to do, and it would be and also what would need to be done is that Europe, the reason people are coming from Africa to Europe is because Europe pillaged Africa for donkey's years and left those countries in a situation that they couldn't survive for themselves, and Europe should be actually rebuilding those countries and assisting them and actually making their countries livable for the people that they have, and that would go a long way towards preventing the immigration that we actually see as well at the minute.
I just want to go back to that figure of 30,000 you mentioned earlier, Richard. I don't know who you mentioned it in the Dáil as well, and on that basis you calculated that a figure of 600 million. Because I really want to get this figure of 30,000. There's a minimum number of people under this EU Asylum and Migration Pact that would have to be redistributed throughout the European Union. Yes. It's not that 30,000 people would come to Ireland. There are 30,000 that have to be redistributed, and 648, I think, is the number that would come to Ireland under that redistribution.
And for every person that we don't accept in...
Of
the 684, you get a fine of 20,000.
But that's 12.5. You quoted a figure of 600 million.
That's
you were assuming that the 30,000 was it? Were you when you made your calculations?
The European thing for it's throughout Europe. It's 600 million would be the cost
to Europe.
To Europe.
But what you said in your contribution in the Dáil earlier is, if we do not accept 30,000 migrants, that equates to 600 million in fines. That's what it comes down to for this country.
It was for Europe, but the other part of this now as well is we are also going to be taking in the people come from the UK now as well.
I mean, you said at the beginning of your contribution as well that people are scared, but if somebody hears that 30,000 migrants are going to arrive, or it's going to cost the country 600 million, can you appreciate that might be one of the things that's scaring them?
Of course.
Would you correct the Dáil record?
Well, correcting the Dáil record, it's the 30,000 is for Europe, and the 600 million is to be spread across Europe.
But not this country. So Ireland will not be expected to take 30,000 people. No. You're happy to clarify that, okay? Timmy Dooley, when it comes to the focus of this debate, is it kind of self defeating for the government to be selling it on the merits of how many people can be sent back, and then on the other hand complaining about the tone of the migration and asylum debate.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I don't think that's necessarily what the government is doing. Maybe certain interviews go in a particular direction, but I think what we should be trying to do with this pact is to say to both our citizens and the people who seek to come here that we have a rules-based system. We don't have open borders. We have a system across Europe which allows people to seek asylum in certain circumstances, and that's set out, and they should be processed appropriately. There are other migration aspects. You know, we do provide work permits for people to come from outside the European Economic Area, and that's a separate stream. But when it comes to asylum, I think we've got to be very clear. I mean, I think for the people as well, in an effort to fight against that really right-wing, racist element that's in society, it's relatively small. I think it's very small. But because of the language that are being used and because of using social media in a particular manner, it's starting to create real concerns and real fear in genuine people whom I know, who I deal with on a daily basis, people whom wouldn't have a racist bone in their body, but they're starting to believe some of the rhetoric because maybe they've lost faith in government parties, lost faith in politicians. They wouldn't be alone in that regard. So we have a job of work to show that there's a system that's fit for purpose. And I think it's recognised that there has been a haphazard approach across Europe. Some countries carrying a much greater burden than us, and it's impacting on the people that are elected in those countries. We see it in France, we see it in Italy, we see it in the Netherlands, we see it in Denmark. So, and it's happening in you know, I recently had discussions with politician friends of mine in the Czech Republic.
But it doesn't even have to be another party elected in Denmark. The Social Democratic government of Denmark has adopted policies that would be regarded as hard right in a lot of other countries.
And you see something emerging in Sweden, which was very open to migration for a very long time. And the Swedish Democrats are now supporting that particular government, and they're trying to change direction there. You have a situation in the Czech Republic where there's really no migration, but because it suits the agenda of some politicians.
So, back to my original question, is the government falling victim to that kind of a debate? It's selling a policy on the basis of Helen McEntee. At the committee last week. Now, in fairness, she was asked, what difference would this asylum and migration pact make? But she estimated that up to 50% of the 5,000 people whose applications were being processed or who'd arrived seeking asylum in the country so far this year could be sent back under the terms of this asylum and migration pact.
If you have a rules-based system and people come and seek asylum based on the criteria, if they fail to be recognised as being suitable for the granting of asylum, well then, as night follows day, the expectation is that they will leave or be sent back. Now, that's harsh, but that's the system. And in order to get the public on board, you have to have a system that's working. I think a lot of people that are coming, quite frankly, are fleeing war, fleeing terror.
Thomas Pringle.
And their lives are at risk.
The fact is that, unfortunately, the government has added to this debate and it's fueled it as well, I believe. Because it suits the government and it suits the government agenda, because all the attacks are against the opposition, against independence, against Sinn Féin and stuff like that there from the far right. And actually, you see now that the far right isn't that far right anymore. And you see Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and indeed even Sinn Féin moving to the right to meet the far right, and that's the problem, and this whole debate and discussion then becomes the norm and becomes part of the everyday conversation that we're hearing everywhere out in the streets, and that's because the government has taken this response of acting as if this is a problem to be dealt with all the time, rather than very little talk from government, some but very little talk from government about the positivity of asylum seekers or the positivity of immigration into Ireland and what benefit that brings to our society.
Well, although it is brought up again and again in debates that, you know, I think across the board almost the value of and the added value that migration
but it's
in terms of health services.
I just want to
go to Ireland because, you know, there are demonstrations at various accommodation centres around the country. And to what degree is the tone of the debate, and this is your assessment rather than anything else, to what degree is the tone of the debate in Leinster House to a certain degree being influenced by that, or is it having an impact on people on the street?
I think it is having an impact. I mean, if you look at Newtown Mount Kennedy last week, last Thursday in particular, when it escalated, there were very violent scenes down there. And yes, there might be some people there who have these, you know, quote unquote valid concerns and they're worried about resources. But you also had people marching behind banners that said, this is a plantation, Irish people are being replaced, white people are being replaced, things like that. A couple of my colleagues, they did a long read yesterday on Newtown Mount Kennedy, and they went through Facebook groups and they spoke to people down there. And yes, some people, you know, are measured and whatnot, and they're talking about resources. On some of these Facebook groups where they're talking about protecting towns like this, they're calling migrants vermin. They're saying that they should be exterminated, and they're talking about plantations and the replacement of Irish people. No, that is not everybody. Yes, that is probably a minority, but these people are showing up at these protests. We saw in Ockham the other day, construction workers were accosted by a group of people who assumed they were moving in to you know, prepare a disused hotel for asylum seekers. They weren't. They were putting in a beer garden and other facilities, but they intimidated the men until they left, and they filmed the whole altercation. I spoke to one of the construction workers the day after. He was completely shook. They were told, get out or we'll make you get out. And they did. They weren't allowed to do their work. There were lads coming in to try and put in a beer garden at a disused hotel. So there's just such a level of misinformation, and people are at fever pitch, even if there's rumours saying, we think this hotel is going to be used for this purpose. Almost immediately, crowds gather and they start intimidating people who are down there in some cases. Again, it might be a minority of people, but this is happening.
All right, Richard, I don't know, you were shaking your head there during that. I just presume
100%, any person that goes out and does damage to any property or threatens anybody, I will not put myself alongside that person. But it's absolutely horrible that they would put anyone. But you did say something, Ola, it is a minority. There is a majority of people that have valid concerns.
Right,
but there's a minority making a bad
If the minority is marching at the front of a march with a banner that reads, no plantation, why is the majority? Why is there another sizable cohort of people marching behind that banner and allowing their concerns, be they valid or not, become associated with what's a far right, baseless conspiracy theory?
Yeah, does this mean the minority of people that are coming out there that are doing what they're doing, they go up to the front or else they go to the back and they turn themselves wherever the cameras are? The people that are actually there that have valid concerns actually stay within the bunch. They didn't cause any problems in these. But there is a minority that actually travel from place to place, and all I just said it there, no matter what, I'm in construction all my life and I'm hearing it in my own areas that people coming in doing work on buildings are, the same thing is happening, and they're afraid of their lives, that they're going to be set alight because they're doing up a building or they feel that there's something happening in areas. We had it in Limerick there 2 or 3 weeks ago. There was a public meeting again called over, but they were actually moving Ukrainian families from where they were into a place where there was actually going to be schools and things, that there was placements in schools. But straight away, it was the first time that actually the government or the council contacted me, asked me for my help. Could I actually talk to the residents and people in the area to let them know it is okay? It's Ukrainian families that are actually being transported. That was my first time that I was consulted by government departments or councils to let me know what was happening. And once we spoke to them, it actually was fine. There was no problem.
So what if you were to name the top two concerns that people have on a local level that are commonly described as valid concerns, what are they?
The biggest concern is communities that they just want to have knowledge of who's coming into an area to make sure that the services are there for people.
Does it matter though if they're Ukrainian or if they're from another country?
No, it wouldn't. Once they were known, but a lot of concern in our places that have no policing and no services themselves for their own area, and they're already struggling. And then they see there's a massive influx of males, which if they were told what was happening, if they're told that this thing would be put in place, if they were told that it's going to be bus services put in place, that these people are coming in and they're going to be processed in the next 6 months and they're going to be moved to a place where they can actually work in the country. And if people are informed, people are good right. When they're informed. They get no information. And as I said, in the time that they've been coming in here, Ukrainians included, I've only been contacted once by government departments or a council to let me know what was happening in an area in Limerick.
All right, Timmy Dooley.
There are genuine concerns by some because a certain group have decided to change the narrative about migration. They're suggesting that they're fighting age men. They're here to implant their culture on Ireland. This Ireland is for the Irish. Ireland is full. You hear all of these kind of tropes being dished out. And yes, there are women in rural areas who get very concerned because they believe this rhetoric. They've come to me in certain areas because they're really concerned. They say, we walk that road. These are fighting men. We don't know. They're from the different culture where they don't have any respect for women, and my daughters are concerned. So people get very het up about it because the lack of knowledge, the lack of experience of these people. I'm not so sure, though, that if you notified people well in advance that the problem would go away. I think in many cases you'd see the building set on fire, and we've seen that. So I'm not disagreeing with you, Richard.
So you're saying so to me that you want people to be put into an area and not notify anyone, residents in the area. So you want to add to the frustration that you just saw on like you just described from
women. You won't add to frustration. You won't add to frustration. People will be frustrated if they're going to be frustrated by people coming into the community. I think the difficulty that the government has encountered, and it's been the not targeting the right facilities at the right time. Some very rural areas where there is no transport, putting 50 or 60 men into those areas is neither good for them nor good for the community. I think where you'd put them into a more populated area and you provide the appropriate level of accommodation, it works better. I see it in my county. I see where the people are in Ennis and places like that.
Thomas Pringle, when people, have any of your constituents come forward with you about with concerns about accommodation being provided in the area and the commensurate facilities being provided, or who's going to go into it? And what do you say to them, if so?
Yeah, I've attended meetings locally at home with that, where there's been concerns that were expressed and where there's been agitation against accommodation happening and stuff like that there. And the reality is, Tammy's right, the government had decided that they're not going to have, like, basically, if you were going to have public consultation, you would end up having three rows rather than having one, and that's what the government has decided. So what they do is they don't tell anybody, they announce the accommodation and they put the asylum seekers in there and they have a row, and then it settles down after that. And their attitude is that, well, we're not going to have three rows about it, because you'd have to have a row and when you say that you're thinking about it, then you'd have a row and saying that they're actually going to happen, and then you have another row when they'd actually arrive.
All right, but what about take the heat out of some of the, because there was people
that's
on
the negative of response, sure, there was, government has done and created this problem as well. I think you should be actually.
I know, but just if you bear with me, there was a discussion had on Katie Hannon's Upfront programme a few weeks back, and one of the points that was being made came from people in Ballyhadreen that, you know, they were a model of best practice in terms of integration. They'd been promised a number of resources into the community. They didn't come, and people felt that, you know, what was promised wasn't delivered. If the resources were delivered, would it take the heat out of that one big row?
I don't know. Well, the resources wouldn't be delivered before asylum seekers would move into the community anyway. That's the way the government operates, and that's the problem. Like, the government makes the I don't know what the situation is in relation to Ballyhadreen, but the government should be going around the country and saying, we have this we have to deal with asylum seekers, we have asylum seekers coming. They should be having the conversations in communities that there's no intention of putting anybody in.
I just want
that they have the conversation and communities and they're talking to people, but the government will not do that.
Okay. I just want to get to a few listener comments, and we better get on to some of the other issues we want to look at this evening. So an email from Sean: I'm sitting in the kitchen listening to the show. I'd welcome more reflection on why people are migrating to Ireland, decades of interference from Western countries and inaction from countries where corporations responsible for high emissions are based regarding climate change cannot be ignored. That's from Sean. As somebody, the only land border in the UK is, as we know, an open one into Ireland. How can Sunak see this as a success? It's a we're essentially, and we are now the UK overflow, says another texter. Considering the tax coming into the state, there's no excuse why anyone, including asylum seekers and refugees, should be homeless in Ireland, said Kieran. And finally, Roderick O'Gorman is the Minister for Integration. There has been a total lack of concerted effort for proper, sustained, collaborative integration. It's been anything but integration. Drop people and leave the locals in the dark with no communication or engagement. This is the opposite of integration, says another texter.